A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
Welcome to the World Series Dreaming Chicago Cubs Dreamcast, now hanging out with Obstructive View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs. We're just a bunch of fans who love the local nine and talking baseball, including 2016 World Series champion Cubs. And this is Cam. With me is Adam from Obstructive View. How are you doing, Adam?
Doing fantastic. How about you?
The Cubs are actually my local nine again, even though I'm in the south side of Chicago, about, I'd say, about 10 miles south of Wrigley Field, give or take. Maybe 16. I can't math. but it's like a 1 hour bus plus red line ride up from where we are to Wrigley Field, so it's not too bad.
Okay, so 2 miles.
You wish. Yeah, but yeah, it's been fun. You know, we got to get in touch with some friends who live around here, right down the street from the university that I went to for graduate school, and yeah, just pretty happy to be here. I've built more furniture in the past few days than I think I've ever had to build, so that's kind of fun. Lots of IKEA.
Yeah, nothing like the post-IKEA work venture, putting in the sweat to get it all together.
Yeah, they don't make it easier for you, because there was one where, like, I was just freaking out because the instructions didn't line up, and then my wife realized, oh, they sent you the old instructions, and they had to download the new ones off the internet. I was like, okay, I'm not missing like several pieces after all, right? Okay, but yeah, they've cut costs a little bit because the little casters that used to be metal are now plastic, and they're still holding things in place. So I guess their scientists like figured out a kind of plastic that could work just as well as metal and could be a little cheaper. But yeah, it's just as annoying to assemble as ever, but very sturdy, I might think.
Kind of not unlike a baseball team.
Yeah, like we have to talk about this baseball team that is my local nine now, and you know, basically yours too. But the Chicago Cubs, they are on a tiny little hot streak coming into the All-Star break. This is when we're recording, like the draft is happening as we speak. Tonight is the first and second rounds. We can talk a little bit about that. I'd like to get your impressions of this quote first half, because we've already played the first 81 games, and now I think they're like 47-51. I honestly haven't watched a Cubs game since they got walked off in that one game in Tampa Bay. Like, I've watched a lot of condensed games, just, you know, if they win, I'll watch it. If they lose, I'll look at the box score and sigh and just move on with my day. Like, I think, like, honestly, 2016 has really mellowed me out, because I don't have that monkey on my back anymore, but I still want this team to do well. And it's super annoying, because every single time, like, they have a chance to win, they're just stranding runners, or the bullpen blows it, or something stupid happens, but we're seeing signs that things might be getting better. So I'd like to get your viewpoints on what you like, what you don't like, whether you buy and sell, and so on. So how's that for a plan, Adam?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
It's a perfect plan.
Awesome.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
As the spring gave away to summer, past the ivy-colored dreams, toward the days that kept us yearning for tomorrow.
Yeah, so they split the series with St. Louis in St. Louis. That was kind of cool. They had a chance, the Cubs did, of winning 3 out of 4, but we had that bullpen fail, and then I have no idea what happened in the first game. Just Wisniewski just decided he didn't want to pitch anymore for a while, and then he was perfectly fine for the rest of his outing. And I just sometimes you have that bad inning, and it just torpedoes the rest of your day. But the cool thing is, I think for every single one of these games, even the ones that they're losing, the Cubs are in it. And they're like, you remember in Major League when Lou Brown was talking to the other guy and saying it's starting to come together? Like, we still need to get to that point, but we're seeing some signs that this isn't as terrible of a team as they play.
Yeah, yeah. And really, like, yesterday, the doubleheader was a little bit of an anomaly in that the defense just completely imploded in the first inning. Wisniewski pitched better than he fielded his position. And I don't know how many errors they wound up, crediting the Cubs with in that first inning. There was one play where they switched it from an error to a hit, and it seemed like something they would probably end up changing back the other way, later on in the game, and I don't know where they landed on that. But council said it in the post-game comments, and it was the same thing I was thinking as I was calculating the different plays, that they pretty much had given them six outs in that first inning. And you can't give a team six outs. That there was a point, and this was after, I believe it was after three full innings, either two full innings or three full innings. I can't remember which one it was. We'll say it's two full innings. Wisniewski had thrown 40 pitches over the course of two innings and given up 10 runs, which is kind of shocking that you can give up 10 runs on 40 pitches. Like, that's an incredibly efficient run surrendering to pitch ratio.
Yeah, to give up that grand slam, of course, there's four runs right there. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, it's not just Wisniewski. Like, I've been following the games a lot on game day, and so there's a pitch tracker, which I assume is at least somewhat accurate, because if you look at game day versus Savant, the pitches are basically in the same place. So you assume that it's accurate, and every time I see in-play runs, that blue dot is in the middle of the zone. They're missing in the middle. It's like, if I could time it up, I could probably hit a double. I won't be able to hit a home run. I'm not that strong, and I just suck at hitting. But I feel like if you just keep throwing it there and making mistakes there, like, I don't know how any pitcher gets away with anything middle anymore. And it's like, for the Cubs, there's an inordinate amount of pitches in that zone that just get completely destroyed. And maybe that's just my lying eyes, but it's a problem, at least to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that the guy who gets away with it all the time is Shota. And what the pitch location doesn't tell you is how, at least I don't think it really depicts it in a way that really registers with me, is how much the pitch is moving. Like a pitch that's sweeping back into the strike zone that winds up over the middle of the plate, but doesn't really look like it is, that is a little bit tougher call than, just the four-seam fastballs that are right over the middle of the plate. But there's been a lot of that, and it really does seem like the Cubs get burned on an inordinate percentage of those over the middle pitches. Whereas when the Cub hitters are up to bat and you see the pitch tracker show a ball, over the middle of the plate, I'm like, oh, that's in play out. Like, they're not going to do anything with that. And again, it's a little bit of lying eyes probably, and, doomsday bias. I don't know if that's an official logical fallacy, but I think it's one that I often have as a Cub fan is whatever happens, it's not going to be good. But over the course of this little hot streak, I will say that for the most part, the starting pitching has just been phenomenal.
Yes.
Yesterday was that anomaly because, Wisniewski gave up basically the ball game in the first inning, and then Assad only went 2 1/3. Wisniewski only went 4. They had to use 3 actual pitchers in game 1. Bodie closed out the game admirably. Yeah. And then in game 2, needing 4 pitchers to get through it. 4 bullpen pitchers to get through it.
Assad had just come back from injury, so we kind of expect the rust, but it was still kind of sad.
yeah, it wasn't really sure what to expect on that. Especially with Little going down on Friday, which kind of hurt. It's like, okay, they really needed to juggle the roster to get you get the extra man for the doubleheader, but then you're also bringing up somebody. And so they did all kinds. It was like a trapeze family act showing the different transactions, moving pitchers around. We've grown accustomed to seeing starting pitchers go a lot longer and a lot more successfully than just 2 1/3 or 4 innings. It's the starting pitching has been just remarkably deep, efficient, effective. And when the offense is hitting anywhere close to normally and the bullpen is functioning, anywhere close to competently, they win those games. When you have starters going the better course of 3 full games and even, coming close to 4 full games worth of scoreless innings, I think what they wind up with 33 consecutive scoreless innings as a team. And with Baltimore being the team that comprised most of that streak against left-handers, that was pretty cool to see. And it, when the starters pitch like they can, and with the rest that they'll be getting before starting it up, for the post All-Star break segment of baseball, it's pretty exciting to imagine what this team could do with a starting rotation that just seems to, Saturday not considered, really perform well no matter how deep they have to go into the reserves, no matter who they're facing when they're on, they're doing really, really well. Right. It's pretty incredible. I haven't seen a Cubs starting rotation this deep and this effective, despite all the injuries probably in my life.
Yeah. And 2016 was pretty good, but I think you have to go all the way back to when they had, you remember the Sports Illustrated cover with like Wood and Pryor and Zambrano, mm-hmm. Maddox and Clement, right? That was cool. And that didn't actually go as far as we would have liked, but it was still cool to say that, yes, we had that rotation. It was a very nice time to be a Cubs fan.
Yeah. And the thing about 16 was that was, as far as Cub injuries go, that was the ideal. That's what you dream of, is that your roster stays as healthy as that team did from start to finish, especially the rotation. But when you think about how many different starting pitchers these Cubs have had to employ, it's incredible that we've gotten the production out of them. that we have. It's really something.
So before we go too far forward, based on your attitude, and which kind of reflects mine, I don't think this club should sell. I don't think there's basically anything you want to sell and still be good enough to bounce back next year. So they pretty much have to buy, right?
Well, that's tough. I mean, we're ignoring the third option of just do nothing. And there's really two questions, right? There's the competitively what makes the most sense, and then there's the from a marketing standpoint what makes the most sense. Like, can they really afford to bite the bullet and just phone in the rest of the year, sell off, you know, a few pieces, including, you know, the Cody Bellinger is always the guy on the trading block, and you know, he just fractured a bone in his hand, so yeah, one of his fingers. So can you really expect to get much from a guy who was not having a great year to begin with, and now it's like, is he really going to be able to hit, you know?
And if he does come back, is he going to opt out now? I feel like he's going to opt into at least next year. So you can count that money, just put that money aside as spent, you know?
I
honestly don't know how they think. Like, Boris had that really stupid offseason for, you know, 3 out of the 4 clients. It just makes you wonder how Cody is going to go. But you also kind of think, well, if he likes it here, he's probably just going to stay and get the money and use that as a pillow contract. But there are multiple levels of buying, right? You can buy like they did with a rental, quote, rental type player like Jamer Candelario last year. Or they can go balls out and say, okay, we have all these outfielders, and we obviously have outfielders on the roster already who are doing well, so we can't really do anything with them. Why don't we trade them for another pitcher or a big bat or something like that, you know? So it seems like there could be a happy medium where they do sell from surplus and get somebody who can help grow with the core that is being manifested now, because those guys are going to be here for at least another 2-3 years. So get somebody who will also be here for another 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have no idea who that's going to be. And I assume we won't know until after the All-Star break, when, you know, the draft's over, you know, they can actually start thinking towards, when's the trade deadline this year? I feel like it's July 30th, but I'm not sure.
That's always the date that clicks in my head, even if I hear a different one.
Yeah,
like, let's. Someone could tell me, oh, it's July 18th, and I'd be like, oh, July 30th? Okay.
So I'm going to Google the heck out of this. July 30th is the correct date. July 30th is, in fact, a Tuesday. So I'm not entirely sure why they chose a Tuesday, but yeah, that's the day we're looking for.
Yeah. So it's obviously, it's still a little bit away. You know, a week of the distance between now and July 30th is essentially no baseball. So the status of the Cubs playoff hopes won't change a ton between now and July 30th, but it can change. I mean, they're still in that spot where they're 3.5 games out. Obviously there are a lot of teams ahead of them, but the fact of the matter is when this many teams are all around the same, you know, winning percentage, that's where the bulk of them are going to stay. You know, those, the 8 or so teams who are kind of bunched around the, the slightly sub 500 winning percentage, they're probably, half of them are going to wind up right where they are. Two are going to be a little better and two are going to be a little worse. With this balanced schedule that MLB has had going for this year and the previous year, I think this is what we can come to expect, is a fairly large middle class in baseball, and the Cubs are right there in it. Yeah, things haven't gone well for the first half, but the strength of the starting pitching, the amount of players that they have potentially returning from the IL, and the potential for improving their bullpen with really just one guy could do it. You know, if they brought in one person who could function as a closer, it would transform the rest of the bullpen, because when you bring in somebody from the outside, this is my mantra when it comes to replacing rosters like this, is when replacing guys, when you bring in somebody from the outside who's really good, you aren't replacing your best player. He's replacing your worst player in that bullpen.
Yeah.
You know, you bring in a closer and your best player, like, your depth chart just takes one step down. And so you end up improving all the way up and down. Conversely, when you lose your best bullpen pitcher, you aren't replacing him with your second best bullpen pitcher. You're replacing him with your replacement level worst bullpen pitcher. Especially when you're also replacing guys in the starting rotation. Like, the thinning out of the bullpen has gone in both directions, both to the injured list and to the starting rotation. Like, even Assad was essentially supposed to be a bullpen guy this year, and instead he's been one of the better starters in the league. So the Cubs bullpen has suffered loss to injury and to needs in the starting rotation. So the fact that they've been bad isn't completely shocking. I think it's very defensible in terms of, like, what Jed's plan was for this bullpen going in. It hasn't had the chance to be anything close to what it was designed to be. And so as Merriweather gets well, I don't know if Adbert is even really slotted to come back, but I know a lot of the other higher velo guys in the bullpen seem like they were ready to come back. Have seen some promising flashes from some of the other guys. If they acquired a legit closer type, I really think that the change from first half to second half and what the bullpen could do could be absolutely shocking. And frankly, even if they don't bring in the closer, the improvement still could make the second half Cub bullpen unrecognizable compared to the first half.
Yeah, I feel like, Hector Neris is still suspect, but at least he's been effective, right? Like, so I have the philosophy of baseball chaos. Baseball is inherently a chaos event where if you take a bat and you run into a ball the right way, it will go a long, long way the other way. Or if it hits the right pebble or a base or something like that, or it bounces off a pitcher, suddenly you're on base. So I'm always rooting for the chaos events. Like, I don't care how they get on. I don't care about the exit velo or whatever. If they get on, that hit still counts. Or if it's an error, who cares? You're still on base. So I'm rooting for that. Like, I don't care how it happens. I just need it to work. worry about the sustainability thing later. So at this point, the Cubs are 47-51. They're 4 games under .500. They're within 4 games, actually 3.5, wild card spot, with all those teams on top of them, which is kind of, you know, their fault for not winning more games. But you already, you know, addressed the issues with just testing to death and losing a bunch of key players and other key players not coming back in time, et cetera. But late July, I believe Merriweather has gotten into a couple of rehab starts. That's good. Wicks and Brown, I think they had setbacks for some reason. I don't know what's going on. It's like they're either mutants that can't heal right or the Cubs doctors are complete quacks. I just have no idea why it takes so long to heal a neck or you know, whatever was wrong with Wicks. Like, I can't even remember anymore. I can't keep track of all these injuries because it just been happening wave after wave after wave. You know, you get one guy back and then another guy goes down, and I guess other teams kind of have to deal with that. But it's just so frustrating to know that you've never had like even 1 or 2 days where the entire band was together because somebody was, like, say Tyone wasn't even on the team opening day because he had to ramp up from injury in the spring. And then Cody Bellinger goes down with the ribs, and now he's gone with the middle finger injury. And then you look at Yancy Almonte, who was doing really well, and suddenly he can't do anything anymore because there's a shoulder problem that needs to be surgically repaired. So he's gone for the year. It's actually kind of amazing that they're only 4 games under .500 at this point, and I wonder if, despite everybody calling for him to be fired, part of that is Craig Counsell.
Yeah. Believe it, there have been times when a couple weeks ago, kind of at the nadir of the Cubs losing skid, where, you know, around the Justin Steele wake the F up speech.
That was cool.
Sermon, like around then, leading up to then, I really had felt like, okay, there are so many ways, you know, even injuries considered, where players on this team are performing below expectations in almost every way, that you have to ask, all right, if it's not the manager's job to get the most out of his players, what is it? You know, like, this, it's not what we're, you know, that's not what we're seeing. But the continuing to fight, the continuing to play, the continuing to compete through this stretch, when, you know, a couple of your middle of the outfield guys and Tauchman and Bellinger have hit the IL, and you're having to do more with less, guys seem to be getting back to that, just playing baseball and not having the weight of the world on their shoulders with every single at bat. And you're starting to see some adjustments in approach. Amaya has tweaked his swing and his the leg kick that he starts his swing with, and we've seen that pay off. PCA, I'll say today, obviously, 2 home runs is a great day. Throwing in a walk after that is another great thing to see, in that he followed up his kind of golf homers with an actual at bat. You know, when he's seeing the pitch come in and actually, you know, basing his swing off of what he's seeing from the ball, rather than some predetermined plan of, I'm just going to swing, like, regardless. So, like, you know, seeing that is pretty cool. And seeing just the team get back to being the guys that you were expecting them to be. Are you expecting 6 home runs in a game? No. But I am expecting guys to show a little bit more discipline, swing with a little bit less reckless abandon, see some adjustments in the swing, the approach. The, you know, I love seeing Master Boney go up there, who spelling his name is hard enough, saying it can be difficult. I kind of want to call him Mass Jabroni. But seeing him just slap at the ball is so much more encouraging than when it looks like he's trying to jack it, you know, over the...
So we're just done with phrasing, right?
Forgive the Master Boney-ish pun jacking, but anyway, seeing him try to hit over the outfield wall, like, dude, when you crush it, they catch it 30 feet in front of the warning track. Like, just, you know, just hit a line drive over the infielder's head. Like, just stay with that. So when you see him loft the ball, I'm like, oh, dude, this is not going well. It's like you can't even hit it sacrifice fly depth. Just hit line drives, please. But other than that, you know, like, seeing him play with his swing a little bit, man, the puns, I just can't stop. Seriously not intended. Just see him, you know, I'm not going to try to talk. We'll move on from him. But, you know, Morel, I don't think he's ever going to dial his swing back, but it was good to see him hit a couple homers today, too. It's like I said.
I hear Jim Edmonds get all pissy because Morel did his little dab airplane thing on the second home run?
And I think it's more, I don't know if he's talking about that. He might be. I don't know which part he's reacting to. The end of Morel's home run trot, I think, is always like, I cringe a little at what other teams are thinking when he takes those last few slow steps and then, you know, does like the crucifix dance looking up to the sky. I don't know if that's what's bothering him or the thing that the whole team does, you know, whenever they hit a home run, they do those gestures. But that said, hearing Jim Edmonds say, I've never seen anything like it, is like, oh, come on. Like, sure you have. It's not, there's nothing Morel does or the Cubs do in general that is any more demonstrative than like an 80% level of what on the Showboat scale of what guys do when they hit home runs. And I don't want to hear the most overrated player in the history of baseball talking about people being too flashy. Like, just save it, Jim. I know this is true about me talking about him. He also made some comment about the fan who caught 2 home run balls in the game. And he was like, oh, he's taking up a lot of space. I'm like, that dude was jacked that he could beat the crap out of Jim Edmonds. I would love to see that conversation happen face to face. And I'd be happy to have this conversation face to face with Jim Edmonds' butt face. I know he would probably beat the crap out of me, but I could use the money, so whatever.
Yeah. I don't know if it's because Morel's just hitting 200 or whatever his batting average is now, but it just reminds me that I really wish MLB would be okay with bat flips, like bat flip it to the moon when KBO players do it. And they have just such majestic bat flips. I wish they would allow that here because that's like, it's not so much the home run. It's my favorite part of their at bat is when they just hurl that bat into the dugout or at the pitcher or at the bat boy. I don't know where that bat ending up, but it just curls so beautifully.
They are fun to watch. Love a good bat flip.
And the funniest ones are the ones where, you know, they bat flip and they trap the bases and then the guy catches at the wall and they're just like dumbfounded. those are pretty funny. But anyway, yeah, we are at the All-Star break. I'm going to basically pick Pete Alonso to win the Home Run Derby because the other parts of the field don't really scare me as much as Pete Alonso does, you know, against defenseless baseballs. But there is one All-Star, and I don't think there has been any other replacements that are Cubs. Shota Imanaga. Yeah, he's pretty much as advertised, and other than a couple of starts that we really were afraid of, where he got blown up by home runs, he's been incredibly effective. I think we did mention him earlier on, like how, okay, this is a 92-mile-an-hour fastball. There's some movement to it. Maybe it rises. Maybe he just spots it really well, but you'd think that that fastball would always get destroyed. It has not, and he's like solidly in that Rookie of the Year race, except for, you know, this guy named Paul Skeens that everybody like hypes up, but you know, he's obviously really good too. But yeah, let's talk about Shota being the lone Cubs All-Star representative.
Yeah, I love it. I don't love that he's the only one, but obviously it makes sense given the team's performance. Although fellow Rookie of the Year candidate Michael Bush definitely made his case for being on the All-Star team. I don't think it was a big snub that he didn't make it, but yeah, he definitely rounded out this first half very impressively. But Shota, yeah, it's so fun to watch. I think he's maybe Jed's most somehow his most celebrated acquisition and yet his most overlooked acquisition. Like, it's almost like because the contract isn't enormous. I mean, it's good. It's a great deal. And it's kind of like, oh, we got him for a steal. It's almost like Cub fans have kind of like swept that under the rug of like, oh yeah, Shota's great. Almost like he just showed up and picked the Cubs and Jed had nothing to do with it. But yeah, he's been so entertaining, a great competitor. And even this is going to sound convoluted, I promise, but the two starts that Shota had that really did kill his ERA, the only reason that he stayed in the game so long is because he has been so dependable. I think almost any other pitcher in the Cubs lineup and most starting pitchers in the league, barring a situation like Wisniewski's last night when you're in a doubleheader and you can't afford to replace him, Council kept him in the game much longer than you would expect someone to, because it's like even when he's having a rough game, he's still better than whoever you might bring in from the bullpen. So he was allowed to kind of wear two starts with a much higher earned run damage total in those games than he would have had if he were, say, you know, with Wisniewski on a normal day, or Kyle Hendricks, where it would have been like, okay, yeah, you don't have it, I'm just pulling you out. Instead, he stayed in there longer, he gave up the more runs, and because his ERA had been so low, you saw just a huge swing because of those two games. Very competitive, loved, you know, tough situations. There haven't been a ton of jams that he's gotten himself into, but when he has, there have been several occasions when he has gotten out of them, typically with strikeouts. Yeah, great strikeout pitcher, amazing rate stats, and just in all observable ways, just the ideal guy to have in the clubhouse. Really, really fun to watch how he's become a part of this team and a part of the Cubs zeitgeist. Absolutely love what he's brought to the team this year.
Yeah, he's very happy kind of guy. He kind of reminds me of Russell from Up. If
but I can see that.
He's definitely very animated. That gets the right kind of emotion, I guess. And it's just really fun to watch him go out and play. And, you know, he has a kind of disappointed expressions when he gives up a hit or a home run. And then he just goes back to work. And, you know, he's very accountable. And his translator, his interpreter is also pretty cool. I think they have a good rapport. And I'm pretty sure he's not betting away Shota savings. So that's good, too. But, it's been fun. I hope the next season goes well. I think, like, there was a fear that after his couple of blow-up starts that they had figured out Shota Imanaga, and then he came back. Was it against the Orioles? It was against the Orioles, right? Like, he just shut them down. was great.
And they supposedly kill lefties, and he was just like, screw that. Kill this.
Like, I think part of it is the Orioles ballpark, but he was able to keep everything in the ballpark for the most part, and that was good. So as long as, like, they're popping him up or, you know, they got warning track power, he's fine. If the wind's blowing out, probably not so much, but he's also seems to have been generating a lot more ground balls than we were led to believe. So perhaps that's good. That might be an adjustment he's made. Mm-hmm. But I'm not smart enough to know things like that.
It does seem like when he's on, at least, he's able to dictate how the outs are going to come. You know, it just seems like he has that savvy nature of adjusting to the moment and the needs and the condition of the day. Again, when he's on. I still think, much like Kyle Hendricks, he's a guy who doesn't have a lot of wiggle room. You know, when he's a little off, watch out. But, you know, those times have been far and few between when he hasn't had real good command.
Yeah. Okay, so we're getting down to business, like All-Star Games coming up. They have kind of a roughish schedule to come out of the break, and then I think at some point in August it gets easier. But let's kind of take a look at their schedule real quick.
Yeah, late July and August are pretty interesting because it goes to about 80% interleague games, where we have a series with Kansas City is the penultimate series of July. And then we come back to the NL Central with Cincinnati to end July and St. Louis to start August. And then it's the Twins, the White Sox, the Guardians, the Blue Jays, the Tigers.
But after the trade deadline. So by that time, those teams might have sold, right?
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, who knows? Because the American League is a completely different story than the National League in terms of the number of competitors. So you're right. There could be some pretty trashed rosters. Let me look at the American League wildcard situation. Yeah, you have pretty much after Houston, who is 3.5 games out, there's not much of a competitive field beyond that. Tampa Bay is 5.5 out at 500. Is 5.5 out in the AL. The Tigers, the Blue Jays are, they're out. The White Sox. The White Sox are selling for next year, actually. So I think they're just so pathetically bad. The Twins in that run that the Cubs have, that interleague run, the Twins, the Guardians, and Kansas City are still among those teams who might still be competing. It's hard to tell how much of a seller those teams are going to be, how much of a buyer those teams are going to be, or if they're going to be kind of treading water. I don't know what they think their hopes are moving forward, but definitely like the Blue Jays and the Tigers and the White Sox, you know, they could be in shambles by the time the Cubs face them again.
Yeah. Like, I just have gotten to the point, again, with my little chaos mantra that you just can't assume that people are going to be cupcakes. You got to play everybody tough. But those are games that the Cubs should and kind of need to win in order to get back into it. Like, they're within shouting distance, and, you know, by the grace of God go they. You know, like, they could potentially be like White Sox bad or Marlins bad by now, and they're not. They're so close, and it just takes like one hot streak, or, you know, the NL record is what, 26 games in a row, just do that, right? But
yeah,
they're in it, even if it's been bad for a very long time. Somehow they are in it, like mathematically and by the vibes. Like, they are hitting better, they're scoring more, they're being competitive even in the games that they have lost. I feel like it's worth investing in, and I would be sorely disappointed if they just did that or sold. Like, they can't do that and expect us to buy Marquee for next year. That's kind of what I'm going to have to do, because I can't use Jeff's MLB.TV here. I'm blacked out. So I kind of have to do Marquee. And my wife's radio, unfortunately, has only FM. So I got to buy an AM radio or just sit in my car. But yeah, it's like, I do want to give you money. I want to watch games. I haven't figured out which game I'm going to this year, because I missed the one in San Francisco because we were moving here. And now I just have to look at the calendar and say, you know, do I want to go to a game? Probably at some point, sure. But really, really make it worth my while, you know? And
we're not sponsored, I mean, by this company, but I will say you should check out, as a Chicago resident, Odyssey, the AUDACY, the Odyssey app. That's associated with the Score. They do carry, you can get free broadcasts of all the Cubs games in that app when you are in, you know, when you are geographically close. So obviously, you know, an AM radio will cost you maybe $2 from a Goodwill. But if you, you know, if you want to incorporate it into your devices and whatnot, yeah. Yeah, you can access the radio feeds that way. Yeah, so
good call. I will think about that. I know of Odyssey. I just didn't realize that was allowed, because I thought you had to purchase Game Day or something, Game Day Audio, in order to get live feeds. At least that's how it used to be. But if it's for the geographical area, yeah, I'm here.
I don't know if it was just last season or the year before when they started making that available, you know, where you could bypass, you know, the MLB Game Day app or whatever it is. But yeah, it's a welcome addition when I don't have the old school AM radio handy, or I'm not in the car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good call. And with that, I am going to make an attempt to download that and test it out for when the Cubs do come back from the All-Star break. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. Of course, you can find all of us at obstructiveview.net, where we're basically talking to each other, but that's the best kind of community, where you just shoot the breeze with a bunch of guys who love the Cubs. And yeah, thanks again for hanging out with me, Randall Sanders for the final call, and Rich Deanna for our theme song. And yeah, go show that in the All-Star game. Go future Cubs. Alonso, I guess. I don't know if that was great for him, but They probably don't have to now because Michael Bush is actually hitting the baseball again. But yeah, pretty.
That's right.
It's a good time to be a Cubs fan, I hope. And we'll see what happens. Go Cubs.
Go Cubs. It was more than just a game.